You are listening to Beyond the Jargon, a jargon-free look at graduate students and their research journeys here at UVic. Welcome to Beyond the Jargon. I'm your host today, Liz MacArthur, and joining me in the studio is Alexander Simon, who's doing a master's in music composition here at UVic.
That's great.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Before we started, you mentioned that you're sort of in a flurry of trying to get things finished. You're writing your final graduating composition.
That's right, yeah.
Tell me about it. Can you tell me about what you're writing?
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, it's almost finished. Quotation marks around it, finished. But I want to finish it up just before the Christmas holiday so I can come back with fresh eyes in January, and if I need to do some revisions, take a look at it then. Mm-hmm. But I really have been working on it since September. I've started kind of throwing around some ideas back in the spring and over the summer, and then really put pen to paper in September and been working on it over the last 4 months. Mm-hmm. And so the basic concept for this is it's actually a music and dance piece. So that was something that I really wanted to push forward to get that dance aspect in there. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be for three dancers, and there's 8 musicians involved. And so there's a bit of a story behind it, and which I have an original story that I've written. And I could go in all sorts of different directions to talk about it.
Yeah, it's incredible. It sounds sounds like a huge undertaking.
Yes. Maybe
we can start with, what are the instruments that you're writing for that will actually be performing?
Yeah, so the to correspond with the three dancers, there'll be three instruments. There's the alto flute, the oboe, which doubles on the English horn as well, and the bassoon. Those will be kind of the three characters, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be 5 other instruments are, there's clarinet, tenor sax, horn, bass trombone, and then there'll be a percussionist playing thunder sheet, piccolo snare, marimba, glockenspiel, and singing bowl. And I think I got all those instruments
right
in there. Yeah,
so. And is it, what is the style of the music?
Oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. The 20th and 21st century in terms of music is interesting because there's been such an expansion of styles and genres. Both in the artistic, art music world, so to speak, and popular music world. Whereas, if you look, at the Baroque period, people were roughly writing, even if you're from different countries, everyone was writing kind of roughly in this Baroque style. But once you get into the 20th century, you have American minimalism, you have avant-garde music from Germany, avant-garde music from France. Mm-hmm. You have all these just kind of fracturing of styles. So for me, I kind of take... I try to take a bit of the old and a bit of the new. Mm-hmm. I'm still very much interested in harmony and so how sounds overlap and the kinds of the colors that result out of that. So that's a big part of my process is thinking not just, melodic lines, so to speak, but when all these instruments are stacked up, what is that kind of, that resultant chord or that resultant harmony, what does that sound like? So that helps to inform a lot of what I do. So in terms of style, I really don't know if there's something, maybe somebody else, if they heard it, they might be able to describe it better than me. But I guess a bit of the old and a bit of the new is what I try to look for.
Tell me about the story that you wrote that is sort of the background for the piece.
Yeah, so it's a bit of an abstract concept. I kind of have to backtrack a little bit to explain about it. So when I was throwing around ideas for my piece back in the spring, thinking what I wanted to do, one of my initial ideas was to write some incidental music for an existing work. So, for instance, people have written incidental music for Shakespeare plays or, for sections of novels or, other works.
And can you maybe just define incidental music people who are listening?
Yeah. Yes, for sure. Yeah. So incidental music is, for instance, the Finnish composer Jean Sibelius wrote incidental music for Shakespeare's The Tempest. So it is essentially music that is not supposed to visually go with anything, but follows that same story of The Tempest. Mm-hmm. And then so it's just kind of, it would be like a film score, but without the actual visual aspect of it. So that's what I mean by incidental.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah. So that was one of my ideas, was I wanted to do some kind of concept like this. And I went through a couple of ideas, and when it came down to it, I decided, I wanted to have my own story. And then when I was looking for what kind of a story do I want, I realized that there's all these other composers from different cultures and different countries that can use their own cultural mythology or folklore. And, you know, being kind of the cultural mishmash Canadian that I am, I felt I didn't really have that kind of cultural folklore or that I could really use for my own. So I thought, well, what is it, you know, what are the stories that I grew up with when I was a kid? And so when I was a kid, video games were like a huge thing for me. And that's, I felt like those were kind of the stories of my childhood. So I wanted to take some elements from that and kind of and spin it around and make it something that was my own. So I took the essence out of certain characters and then transposed them into my own world. So it's purposefully abstract so that there's no real, I don't think you should really be able to see a correlation between the characters in my story and anything in that already exists. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the slight, that's the kind of the background behind it. And then, so the story itself is quite abstract. So I've written a libretto, which is just a short, basically it'll be in the program notes. So whoever goes to see the performance, they'll be able to read this story. And it's just about a page long.
Right.
And it's divided into 12 scenes. And there, some of them are very, very simple. Like the first scene, the description is simply a forest. That's all it says. Mm. And then each character as they enter, as the story kind of unfolds, it's these three characters meeting in this place, and just kind of the interactions, how they interact with each other, and then kind of their decision to collaborate and then leave. So there's not supposed to be, my style of storytelling is more, for anybody familiar with, you know, John Steinbeck novels, there's not really like a major conflict with anybody or any kind of thing like that, but it's just a story about people's lives. And that kind of storytelling really speaks to me. So I wanted to kind of use that. And because originally I had thought about writing incidental music to a John Steinbeck work. And so that kind of that element carried over into my eventual storytelling of just kind of a story about people. Yeah.
Wow. That sounds, it sounds like it would be one thing to take a story and write music that would sort of follow the storyline, but then also to incorporate dancers. How much direction do you give them? How do you write sort of a dance piece?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I've just, in the last week, actually, I just finally spoke to some people who are interested in being involved in the dance aspect, because I have no involvement in that world up to this point, and unfortunately, UVic doesn't have a dance program. So I kind of had to do some searching around the city, and I did finally come across these people. So we're gonna talk in January and see where we go from there. So I guess I'll, you know, style myself, you know, the artistic director, so to speak. But so I have certain ideas about, you know, what kind of, there are certain movements and certain, like I know the entrances of the characters. And so we're roughly, I have this rough idea of how things are going to be placed. But I also want to give them the choreographer freedom to bring their artistic sensibility to it, and to allow, because I don't want the dance to be restricted by my lack of knowledge about dance. So I want to give some general input and maybe offer certain in certain sections, okay, this is what I want to see. So I will be closely involved with them once we start working, but I do also want to let them be free to make their own decisions about it.
How come you wanted to incorporate dance? You say you're not involved in that world. Are you just sort of a fan? Or?
Actually, there's kind of two sides to it. One side is I saw my first ballet only 2 years ago. Okay, actually, Christmas time 2 years ago, I saw the Nutcracker when I was in Montreal, and that was the first time I had seen a ballet live, and I was really moved by it. It was something quite incredible. And since then I've searched out some other, Stravinsky has some, has the Rite of Spring, and he has another, piece, Les Noces, which is just the incorporation of music and this visual aspect is very compelling. And I feel like I have my own history of this, music and visual element, as I mentioned earlier about, you know, growing up with playing video games all the time, I think they kind of started there in a way where there is this constant, they're not separate things. That you always have music and you always have visual cues. And so I think there is a certain element of that that was ingrained in me. And even starting on my own, when I started music lessons, even before I started playing an instrument, I took, it was a group music and movement class. So it was all just about exploring how sound moves you and mm-hmm. kind of that. So there's, it kind of goes really a long way back. Mm-hmm. This. So even though I wasn't directly involved in dance, so to speak, I really feel like I'm a visual person when it comes to music. So in one way, it's new territory, and in the other way, it just made a whole lot of sense mm-hmm. for me to realize these two elements together.
Mm. It must feel very fulfilling to come to a point in, you know, your academic career where you can draw on something so deep that, you know, makes so much sense to you and actually, you know, start to see it come to life.
Yes.
Did you think that this is how your master's would sort of play out? Is this what you thought would be happening?
I had no idea. I actually, when I came here last year, I had a page in one of my notebooks where I just started writing down. I thought, oh, this could be a cool idea for a thesis, or that would be a cool idea. Mm-hmm. And all of those have just kind of disappeared once I really started thinking about it in the spring and I had these ideas and I thought, oh, yes, this is really what I want to do. These other ideas, you know, they can maybe come later or not. But mm-hmm. so I had no idea for sure when I started off. But once I had that idea, I knew that that's what I was going to do.
Hmm. Yeah. So you are going to head into your second year of your master's.
Well, I mean, in my second year. I have this one semester left. So the performance will be in March, and then I'll do my defense, mm-hmm. and then that's it.
You're done. Wow. Yeah. So how did you come to UVic? Did you do your undergrad here?
No, actually. Again, I have kind of another varied history. I actually started my undergrad as a science major in Halifax. I was at St. Mary's University. Hmm. And after 2 years there, slightly unfulfilling 2 years there, I realized that music was just something that interested me way more than what I was currently doing. So I did a couple of years at UPEI and then finished off my undergrad at Memorial University in St. John's. And then I took a few years off because I'd been in school for 6 years and mm-hmm. just thought I need a little break from this. And then it was just one of those things where, again, I was kind of getting away from music a little bit and I really felt like I needed to come back to it. And I think doing my master's just made the most sense of being able to be in a community of musicians and push myself to learn more and, you know, have that opportunity to have my music performed and see other people perform their music. So one thing I'd never lived on the West Coast. I'd spent most of my life on the East Coast and Central Canada. So that was kind of an appealing aspect. And UVic has a very good image in their composition program for experimental music and mm-hmm. being open to trying new things and going in new directions. So it seemed like a good fit. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. When you did your undergrad, were you doing music composition then, or were you studying a specific instrument?
Well, all musicians in your undergrad, you have to take an instrument anyway, regardless of whether you're doing musicology, composition, you know, whatever you're doing, you do have to study a major instrument. So piano is mine. Mm-hmm. But when I was at UPEI, they didn't have a composition program, so I was just doing music performance. And then when I switched to Memorial, it was a combined composition theory program.
Hmm. And why are you in composition rather than pursuing something like performance? I guess it probably fulfills different parts of what you want to do.
Yes. Yeah. I do like to play, and I still as much as I can. When I'm able to perform my own pieces, I like to do that. Mm-hmm. Technically, I'm not the most advanced player, and part of that is when I in my teens I stopped playing for about 5 or 6 years. So when I came back to music, I was a little bit farther behind everybody else. So it kind of took a little while to catch up. So I kind of realized at that point that I wasn't going to, you know, I wasn't going to be a concert pianist, and I wasn't going to be the best piano player. And just that the creative side, what I'm able to fulfill as a creative person kind of fits better in composition. Like that's you can still do that when you're performing, and I really believe that performers should have that creative side, where they, you know, that interpretative side, but I think for me it just fits better to compose, where I'm kind of able to build from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you write pieces for yourself to play as well on the piano as well as others?
Yes, sometimes. And actually, it's kind of a funny thing, because in one way, writing for piano is very hard for me, because there's a bit of a mental block where I sometimes limit myself by what I'm able to do, right, rather than what other people are able to. So, you know, for instance, when I write for the oboe, I don't know how to play the oboe. So I'm kind of free myself to just write whatever within the constraints of what the instrument's able to do. Mm-hmm. And then I hand it off to the oboist. And then if they say, well, this is really hard, I say, well, you know, I'm sure you'll be able to play it eventually. So, you know, that kind of allows me to try different things on other instruments. And kind of maybe push them a little bit whenever possible. But I'm still kind of getting over that block of when I sit down to write something for the piano, there's kind of that little voice that goes, oh, well, you know, you'd have to practice for a really long time to be able to play that. So maybe just tone it down a little, or mm-hmm. give that part to somebody else, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I still do write some more difficult parts for the piano that, you know, not within my abilities. Mm-hmm. But I do like to write for myself sometimes. Like, sometimes you have an idea of I'm writing for this specific person, and sometimes you're just writing music. So sometimes I do write for myself when I go, I'd like to be in this ensemble and play this piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That idea really interests me, of writing for an instrument that you don't actually play and you don't know what that experience of playing that would be like. Mm. I was talking to another musician last week about, she's a folk musician, and she was talking about just playing her guitar, piano, yes, and then sort of what she called like hallucinations of like this sort of arrangements that then come to life when she works with somebody else who can write these arrangements. Mm. What is the experience like writing for other instruments? Are you hearing it in your head, or are you sort of banging stuff out on the piano to hear it?
A bit of both. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an interesting point about the arranging, because that in a way is different from composing. Composing and arranging can be two very different sides, and so sometimes you compose and sometimes you arrange and sometimes you're doing it at the same time.
Right.
And arranging and orchestrating are something that also interests me quite a lot. So sometimes the genesis is just hearing these sounds, and as a pianist, necessarily I have to realize these in a certain way at the piano. And because, as I mentioned earlier, because I'm very interested in kind of this vertical aspect of tones, about mm-hmm. how they, you know, how things sound. So I can kind of do that at the piano, you know, be able to just throw down the pedal and kind of clunk out a bunch of things and then kind of see how that, but it still requires a certain amount of, extrapolating from there, going, okay, well, I know, you know, this sounds like this on the piano, and I know I'm going to get the same note on a different instrument, but it's going to sound very different. And how's that, you know, and then so trying to imagine six instruments playing those six different notes.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get surprised sometimes when you go into your first rehearsal, mm-hmm. and you just kind of, you cross your fingers and you go, oh, I really hope this sounds like what I imagine it sounds like. And sometimes it doesn't. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's great. And sometimes it doesn't, and it's not so good. And mm-hmm. it just means you have to go back and try again. So it's an interesting process that, you know, going from in your head to hearing it and imagining to actually hearing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you write, are you thinking of like melodies and harmonies? Maybe you hear like a noise or something and it sparks something in your brain, and then you're mm-hmm. trying to write out sort of what you're imagining? Or are you finding that you maybe play around and out of that grows compositions?
Mm. Yeah. Both, I think both contribute to, sometimes within the same piece, and sometimes I have a very clear idea of what I'm doing. You know, like you said, like I hear something, or I have an idea, oh, I think I'd like to try this, and then it just kind of grows out of there. And there are other times when I have more free time and I'm able to just kind of sit down and you know, doodle mm-hmm. at the piano. And then other times there's also... more slightly more abstract stuff, which is a lot of and a lot of my peers at UVic, and that this is kind of what they encourage with, you know, experimental music, but stuff that you can't really thinking outside of just tones, and you know, and thinking about other sounds that an instrument can make, you know, knocking on a violin, or you know, putting a different mouthpiece on a clarinet, or playing something through a computer, and you know, an alternate. So you know, like a lot of these things, you can't really. That's not really something you can just sit down at the piano and play around, or you know. And sometimes it's even kind of hard to imagine, like, oh, like I've never heard this sound before that I want to make. Like, how do you imagine that?
Yeah.
So there's so many different processes that can go into creating piece, and sometimes it's a combination, and sometimes you follow more clearly one path over another.
This sounds like a very, you know, involved process, and sort of like the music continues to grow as you compose and people start to play it. Do you work with a specific group of players that sort of understand what you're doing and you understand the way they play, or do you just get fresh people when you do a new piece?
Yeah, that also depends a lot. I was really lucky in my undergrad. I worked with, I had a violist that I worked with, and that's, I've written a lot of music for viola, like over, I would say over half of the pieces, all of the pieces that I've written involve viola in one way or another, and it's just a lovely instrument for me. And I was lucky to work with this really, really good violist at Memorial. And so there are cases like that where you make this connection with somebody, and then so you write more music for them, and then you keep working with them, and you kind of build this camaraderie, and then other times you're not able to get the person that you need, or you write for an instrument that you've never written before, and this you have to. So it's been a mix since I've been here. I have had the opportunity to work with a couple of people multiple times, which is great, because when you go in to the rehearsal, you already have a feeling of what you're going to be getting out of the other people, and you kind of know how you can play off each other, or you know, they might be a little bit more open to expressing their ideas. Like, you know, if it's the first time working with somebody, they might be maybe a little hesitant to ask questions, or you know, maybe they have an idea about what I want. Whereas if you've worked with them before, they might just be more open about, oh, this isn't going to work, or you know, or you know, that kind of thing. And I'm always open to performers telling me, because I mean, they know their instrument the best. I'm always open to them offering suggestions, or you know, whether it's in terms of notation or sound or anything like that. So this particular project, I haven't really written for winds before. I will have, except for the percussionist, I have worked with the percussionist before, but the other seven instruments, because they're all winds, I've worked with flautists before. The other six of them, I've not worked with. Yes, no, I have not worked with any of those before. So this will be a very interesting experience. New experience writing for winds, and new experience working with these people that I don't know, but I have a lot of faith in them.
And dance. There's
and dance, yes. Yeah, that'd be very new altogether.
Wow. Yeah. What time is it here? Have you ever gone into something like this, a new piece, maybe new players, and something just doesn't work and you have to start over? Like, how do you get over some of these roadblocks? Have you ever had to just completely scrap something because it won't work?
Not at the performance stage, or like at the rehearsal stage. There are definitely, like, there were some points with my grad piece where I'd been kind of just writing sketches all semester, and then I got to the point where I'm putting into notation software and just kind of reviewing things, and I'm expanding these sketches, and there were a couple of sections where I just went, oh boy, this is really not going to work. And which is, it's a little frustrating, because when you know, you spent like 3 months working on something, and then you go, oh, this is not at all what I was thinking. But I was able to, because I kind of had a most of the piece was written, and I had a global idea of how it was going to work. It was just these smaller sections that needed to be tweaked. So that's not so bad. I don't think I've ever had any like massive like, oh, this whole thing doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe one piece that I've really had to rethink, but I haven't had the chance to rewrite it yet. That's something I need to go back and look at. But there are always sections when you go into rehearsal. There are always times when you go in and you just go, well, this is not going to work. Mm-hmm. But of course, there are times you go in and it works even better than you thought. And hey, that's great.
Yeah.
So you always have to leave room for little surprises.
So you're going to be done in the spring.
Yeah.
What happens next then?
I have no idea. I had no idea I would be here now anyway. When I finished my undergrad, I just doing a master's was the last thing on my mind. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but just being out here, having a different, the West Coast just feels so different from the East Coast, and just, master's is so different from an undergrad, and, meeting new people out here, I certainly feel reinvigorated in a way, and I feel like maybe might have a chance out here to do something new or do something unexpected. My long-term goal is to, I'd like to be a freelance composer, arranger, just basically leave my options open to anything. Mm-hmm. I was hired to do orchestrations for a choral group here over this last summer. Hmm. Something like that. That's just taking on these kinds of gigs, so to speak. Playing, having a regular group of musicians to play with, is also something I'm interested in. So just gonna keep on writing and see what happens.
Yeah. All right, that sounds good. And for people who are listening and are interested in the performance, if they want to come and see it, is it open to the public?
Absolutely, yes. It is, all of the student recitals are always open to the public, and they're by donation. In March, mine is on March 15th, and there will be two other graduating composers presenting their pieces. And then that's a Sunday, and the Sunday before and the Sunday after there will also be graduating compositions being performed.
Hmm. And if people want to find out more information, is there a website? Or?
Yeah, I guess if you go to the fineArts.uvic.ca/music, and then, there should be a list up there. I don't know if they have the grad recitals up there yet, but I mean there will be information certainly as we get closer. There'll be information there, and then there's always the tune in live that you can, so if you don't want to leave the comfort of your own home, you can always stay in bed and check us out.
Right on. Thank you so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks for listening to Beyond the Jargon. If you want to listen again, go to our website, cfuv.uvic.ca, and click on the Listen tab.